When you said I'm out of finance, was there anyone that was like, what are you doing?
Maybe I spoke to like 30 people. 29 of them said, don't do it. Marcel sat me down and she just said, you got to follow your heart. You're going to regret it. And it just stuck with me.
Wow, I got goosebumps when you said that.
Don't lose sight of seeing your community as individuals. Because if you know their names, you know, like, then you always have a relationship and you don't want that to become disconnected or distant.
Welcome to the Becoming a Streamer podcast by Pipeline. I'm your host and co-founder of Pipeline, Snoopy. Today, I'm joined by Team Liquid's Steve Erhanset. He's been at the helm of a global organization for the last 6 years that competes in over 17 titles. Steve has got a great story because he actually started out in finance where he had his own company before stumbling into esports and competing professionally. He then dovetailed that into building one of the most successful organizations in the world. Steve has a great story, and if you've thought about what it takes to become successful in the gaming industry, Steve has a great attitude and has some real snippets in here that you should take to heart. You're going to enjoy this episode, and if you do love it, please make sure you share it with a friend. Steve, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. You've got such a storied career in the gaming industry and have played such an influential role in shaping esports for the last decade or maybe even more. So it's great to have you on and share insights into your journey and then how the esports industry interacts with the creator side.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
I think, did we play against each other? Because you were playing a lot in season one. And would you call yourself pro or semi-pro in League?
I was pretty good at the game very early when the server size was pretty small and played competitively, but...
It's still the top 1%, Steve. Take it. It's the top 1%.
I was top 10 in the game on the in-game leaderboard, you know, back then. But, you know, I've fallen off since then. I used to play and I played competitively before LCS and during all the Intel Extreme Masters and some of the events for IPL and what was that event that they had on the East Coast in Atlantic City? It's IPL and...
MLG?
Yeah, some of the MLG events and stuff. Yeah, super early. We're talking about like first year out of beta.
Top 1%, Steve, top 1%.
I'll take it.
Best player in the world at one point. I still hold on to that too. You know, like the scene's changed so much, but I was... You know, back in 2012, I was at the top. So if we think about your journey even back then, did you ever consider I'm going to be a pro? Like, why did you kind of give up on that so early?
So, I mean, when I was growing up, I was pretty good at video games and I would play in like local competitions, like MLG events and went to like regional competitions, and I would always do these blockbuster competitions, which really shows my age, was like consistently winning those. And then I started playing StarCraft and I was pretty good. I was like the top rank in StarCraft, and then I played Warcraft for a bit, and so I was like always pretty good at video games, and I had started my own teams and competed, but I never really took it seriously. I always just thought of gaming more as a hobby. That was like kind of alongside my career, my professional life, as I was like, okay, I need to go to college. I need to make sure I make good grades. I need to get a professional job and start a career. So that's where my mind was. And I just always thought of like gaming as like a hobby I would do.
But you don't get that good at games without, you know, putting in the time. So you must have been putting in a considerable amount of time. I'm guessing you're what, like a teenager at this time, like late teens?
Yeah, I was a teenager. I mean, I was definitely putting in a lot of hours. I really enjoyed chess. I played that competitively. I just love strategy and mapping out movements and thinking about like prediction and pattern stuff. And I enjoyed that aspect of the game. I mean, of course I played, but I just as much enjoyed researching and thinking about the game when I wasn't playing to try to like optimize how I would play when I did. So I enjoyed that aspect of gaming, kind of like the research and strategy.
And when you were making that decision to go to college, was that like, this is the path you're meant to go on and get a regular job? Was it something your parents were pushing, or did you just realize that's what I should do?
No. I was kind of like, I was in college. I wasn't sure what I was going to do. I majored in business management with a focus on entrepreneurship, technology, and innovation. And then I was also pretty creative. So I did a minor in creative writing, and I really enjoyed the arts and painting and drawing, and also a lot of creative writing. And I thought that I would end up in something related to marketing, like maybe content writing and something in that field. But once I was in my senior year at college, I was like looking at careers in that discipline, and I was like, man, I also want to have like a nice house and like a nice car. And I was, you know, like materialistically minded, I guess. So I was like, well, where am I going to make money? And so I was like, I'll just go into finance. So I decided to just, in my life.
There goes your soul at yeah, that point.
Exactly. I just kind of like handed off my soul, and I was like, I'll just go into finance. And so I really like emphasized the financial stuff. And then when I graduated, I started my own financial business.
So this entrepreneurial throughship, is this something you've had since you were a teenager? You essentially were destined to be an entrepreneur from the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting. Like when I was a kid, I didn't think about myself as being entrepreneurial. But thinking back now, there were so many instances in my childhood that were kind of foreshadowing the kind of entrepreneurship that would happen later in life. Like I was doing these, I would always like do the lemonade stand in the summer. When AOL was around, AOL 1.0, and I was like illegally downloading music, and I was like burning them on CDs, because back then you couldn't actually get a CD with all of your favorite songs from different artists. Like you'd have to go and get, you know, Wallflowers or Blind Melon or 311, and then just like listen to that CD and then pull it out of your Walkman and then put another CD in. So I was kind of known as the kid that could like make you a CD for $10.
So I was did you ever raise your prices?
Yeah,
like family
yeah.
members used to come to you all the time. Like you just got bombarded with all this like crap that you have to.
Yeah, no, I was like this nerdy kid in school. I had like had my book bag, had all my burned CDs. I had my library of all the songs, and like, you know, I was just like wheeling and dealing burned CDs all through school.
Is it like a nerdy kid? Did you ever like think about getting caught? Was that ever a thing, or were you just like,
no,
I'm invincible, I can do what I want?
I can just do whatever I want. And then I remember taking my, I asked my parents, it's like, hey, I want to open a PO box. And they're like, why? And I was like, well, I started my business online, and I would design these, back then during the internet, God, I'm really dating myself, but all the ad banners were always the same size on every website. So I would like do custom graphics for companies for building their ad banners. And so I was like getting checks from doing graphic design, and you know, and then I don't know, I was just kind of always wheeling and dealing. And
what were your parents thinking? Or like, did they have any entrepreneurial, or was there someone in your family that was entrepreneurial? Like, did they get what you were doing?
I actually ended up being the first person in both sides of my family, aunts, uncles, cousins, grandparents, parents, siblings, even nieces, nephews, cousins. I was the first one to ever go to college. So,
oh, wow.
So it was like, they're like, yeah, he's pretty smart. Maybe he didn't go to college, you know? And so I just went to, an in-state school. It was like a pretty low tuition amount, and, got in, and, just made sure to apply myself.
Was there any pressure to like be this like golden kid?
No, I was just kind of always, I don't know. I kind of grew up pretty nerdy. You know, I played the band. I was in marching band, and I just worked all the time. So my typical day was like get up in the morning, deliver the newspapers for the Washington Post around 3 a.m. Did that for a few hours, and then get ready for marching band practice in the morning. Do that before school. Go to school, And then I went and worked at Applebee's and I was like, help them do some prep work and some host work. And then I got off and I was exhausted, to school work and rinse, repeat every single day. And then, you know, built up a little savings over time, super young.
You know what's fascinating as you reflect back on that? Do you know there's someone listening to this that has got a job in Applebee's?
Yeah, it's true.
It's like in your shoes, like 20 years ago, it's just, it's thinking, you know, wow, like look where he is now.
Yeah, it's very true. I think through all that, I learned about hard work and, you know, having a positive attitude and, you know, it ends up like working out for you later. You know, you're like, think back, you're like, oh, I remember those days where I really put in hours, you know, just grueling hard work. And you just kind of, you know, it kind of gives you a fabric of who you become later in life.
So how did you find your soul again after working in finance? How long were you in finance for?
So I was in finance for about 7 years. It was building a financial planning practice, which was a lot of sales and marketing. So like networking, finding clients. I had my own company and I would sign them up and help manage all of their assets. And I would also do life insurance sales and disability policies. And so I just grew that practice and the number of clients that I had. And it eventually got to a point where I needed staff to help run the business. And so I just had like a little team that was running this financial planning practice. And it did pretty good. Like I was doing well. I ended up getting my like nice penthouse condo and fancy car, everything like I set out to do.
It was a dream. That was the 20-year-old Steve dream.
It was like, oh yeah, this is what I set out to do when I got out of college. So, and then I guess a year and a half before I stopped doing everything, that's when League of Legends came out. So like I was playing video games on the side and traveling around the world, competing in all these different events and playing in online.
That as well, you were in finance. I just didn't know this about your, I knew you were in finance, but I didn't know that you were, it was your own company and you were just doing League on the side.
Yep. Yeah. And I met Andy from TSM and, yeah, it was just kind of like, it was always just a side thing, you know, because I had like my business. I had like this whole practice with staff. It was a company. It was like going on. And then when we competed at an Intel Extreme Masters event, this woman came up to me and she said, hey, love to sponsor your team. And I was like, cool, that sounds awesome. Like, what do you mean sponsor? Like, you know, like a logo on the jersey and stuff? She's like, yeah. And I was like, okay, well, what are you thinking? She's like, well, it has about like $250,000 sound. And I was like,
you're kidding me.
I was
like,
that sounds good. Let's do it. So I had,
is this 2010? Is this 2010 or 2011? We're probably 2011.
Oh gosh, now you're really testing me. I think something like maybe it was 2011. And then that happened. And then Curse happened where we started building website content for LOL Pro, which was like a website that Curse owned. And I did another contract with them for that. And then that's kind of like when the convergence happened. I was like, okay, well, the Curse contract and this contract with Alienware. And, you know, like, what do I do? Do I continue this financial planning practice with all the staff? Is everything I've built for the last 8 years? Or do I just say fuck it, just like go follow
so
my
how
heart.
Did you, how did you feel at that point? Like, I mean, finance is tough. It is challenging. But you've tied so much of your career, your network, and everything is all invested in. Your life is invested in this practice. Was it fulfilling you? Were you like looking for something else?
It definitely was. Or just kind of happened? I mean, there were aspects of it that were fulfilling, and there were days that were fulfilling. But it didn't. It felt like I would do what I needed during the day and be on, and then I would find respite. You know, I was respite. I would just like find a place to go that was gaming, you know, that I loved. It was like my enjoyment. Like I would go home, be like, okay, now it's time to game and play and like do the thing that I've always done that I love. And so when So it was like a dichotomy in that aspect that I didn't, I mean, I loved my career and I enjoyed it, but I always found another thing that was like more enjoyable, that was like my hobby. And so when that hobby, that thing that I loved ever since I was little, became lucrative, then it was kind of an obvious, more obvious choice to say, okay, well, now take something that I love, that I'm very passionate about, and it can be lucrative. Okay, well, let's just do it.
And make what a jump. Wild opportunity. And you're the cool thing is you're like a competent business guy at this point. You know, you built your own company, you've got people under you. Back then, you were in a better position than most to seize that opportunity.
That's exactly right. Like when I started it, and then I was a player on the team, I was doing it, but I wasn't thinking about it even once I moved out of finance, like, oh, I want to build this massive company and, you know, grow the business. It was just like, I'm doing something I love and, you know, making enough to live off of. Like, that was enough. There wasn't financial goals. It was just the passion and energy of being in a community that I loved and enjoyed and was lucrative enough to live off of. And that's what drove that kind of change. And that's what was happening in that first couple years. It was just, you know, being obsessed, and it was every waking minute of every single day. It was like gaming and building the business and finding sponsors and competing. And at one point then kicking myself off the team and thinking about, oh, well, now I can help run and manage this team. And what does it look like a year from now and a year after that? And really just started to apply those business competencies I had in my financial life to now this gaming life.
That's incredible. Did your friends and family for them, it must have seemed so sudden, but for you, it was happening kind of over a period of time. When you said, I'm out of finance, was there anyone that was like, what are you doing?
Oh, yeah. Man, I remember talking to everyone that was close in my life, family, friends, and I think maybe I spoke to like 30 people, and 29 of them said, don't do it. Like, don't do it. Steve, you have such an amazing thing that you've been building for the last 7 years. It's worth so much. Like, how could you just leave all that, you know, and like go and move to LA in a gaming house with a bunch of guys?
A bunch of kids, too.
Yeah, like a bunch of kids. Like, what are you doing? Yeah, I was like, what? You're just going to move across the country and like go do this whole thing? It's like, because I grew up in the Washington, D.C. metro area, and just like that, I was always out there. So, you know, but there was this Marcel. And she sat me down and she just said, you got to follow your heart. You're going to regret it. And it just stuck with me.
Wow, I got goosebumps when you said that. That's pretty special. Good on her. Is she still a part of your life?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, she's married. She's on her second kid now, and we stay in touch. She still lives out east in Virginia. But yeah, I have very much her to thank, you know?
That is cool. So you did that. You were, I'm in on my passion. You found a way to make it sustainable, which I think is key, that you were able to kind of hang on to making it sustainable, because a lot of people that are chasing their passion, there is no sustainability to it, and they throw themselves all in, but there's nothing to back it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there were definitely times it wasn't always sustainable. It was like, you know, I remember, because at that point, you know, you have staff, you have employees, they're relying on you to generate revenue at the company to pay them so they can live, right? Like, and if you don't have enough revenue to pay your expenses, you're bankrupt and, you know, it's over. And I remember there was a few months where, you know, I was like, oh my God, I literally don't have enough money. Like, I had used all my personal savings to get the business off the ground, and I had my property out in DC, and I thought at one point, I remember saying to Joko Steve, I was like, I think I'm gonna have to like mortgage against my house to keep this business going. Like, and you know, should I like just like take a second mortgage out and keep doing this? And this is before there was any investment interest or anything. Like, you know, and man, I remember, actually, I won't say the name of the player, but I went to one of the players and I said, hey man, like I don't think I have enough money to pay you next month. Like, I'm gonna try everything I can to, like, but I might be a month or two late. And he was like, Steve, don't worry about it. You know, like, pay me when you pay me. And it was just like, oh God, like, you know, there's, so there was definitely some stress.
Yeah, so there goes the penthouse apartment with the fancy car. Like,
everything's maxed
out. You're living on ramen. Yeah, thinking about a second mortgage.
Yeah, I remember I was like living in the gaming halls. I was like, I think those first, like, first, I don't know, 4 years or so, I mean, it's paying myself like $25,000 a year. It's just, I was just, you know, living off of peanuts and just putting everything back in the company.
Well, we can still talk about your journey because you've been in it for a while and you've seen a lot. If we go forward a little bit to TL today, there's a vast difference from the early Curse days to where you are with TL. You know, you've got some of the biggest investors in the world. You are, you know, one of the top esports franchises in the world. And it's not just in the US, it's in the world. Like, TL truly has a global presence around the world. I mean, you've got the office in the Netherlands, you've got the office in LA, and I think you're thinking of building offices elsewhere in the world as well. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's right. We just finished opening our Alienware trading facility in the Netherlands. We have one in Los Angeles, and we'll be opening up more facilities in the next few years. And yeah, you're exactly right. By measure of prize money and also number of championships, we are the largest esports team in the world. And
you have like 15 or so teams, right? Or you're in 15 or so games at this point.
Yep, 17 different games. We have 150 full-time staff, probably give or take like another 100 to 150 contractors every month. And yeah, over 80 players, I believe, last count, 24 different countries. Very much a global fan base, for sure. And I think we moved more from Team Liquid to Liquid Enterprises just in the last, you know, 3 years or so. Just really building a business that can stand the test of time and become multi-generational.
Is incredible. From the ramen days, you know, sleeping on the floor of the kids, not knowing if you can pay one person the next month, never mind 150 people next month.
Yeah, I mean, it's very much in part to all the staff and Victor and decisions on merger, and, you know, it's our investor network with Axiomatic and finding the right partners. And it's just like, you know, how, I don't know what the saying is, but like, when something in life that's very serendipitous happens and it ends up dominoing into something that ends up having a huge impact in your life, you know, it's like all these little incidents that are events where you could have went a couple of different ways in the fork in the road and you just end up that way. And then, I don't know, it's just like snowballs, and all of a sudden you wake up one day and you're like, oh my gosh, like, look at what has been built by this family of TL folks. It's incredible. Yeah.
So you've seen the evolution of the esports industry. I mean TL as an organization is older than your involvement in it as well, and I think it's just been an historic brand in the esports industry, and it's seen so many different chapters in the last 10 years. It's changed phenomenally. We've seen a lot of investment come in the last few years, and it feels like there's a shift kind of happening now where we're moving towards, your point, like the enterprise. Like, it's more than just about being the very best team in a game. What do you think about the future of esports and where it's going?
Yeah. You know, esports, I think, is going to continue to grow as an industry. And I would define esports as just the spectator sport of watching other people play video games, and just purely based on demographic information of age and also kind of affinity towards technology and gaming, the number of people that are going to be consuming gaming content and the number of people will be consuming esports content will only continue to rise. Where it becomes a little complicated is like, how does that industry shape up for talent, athletes, teams, developers, tournament organizers, publishers, league operators, platforms, sponsorship and partnerships and agencies and attorneys. And within each of these different buckets within the industry, there's how it will be formed, right? Just like how folks thought about baseball or football or soccer, and how we were talking a little bit about like how those serendipitous events that happen early within an ecosystem end up shaping what an entire ecosystem might end up looking like or how it might operate. And you go back and you find out it was just like one decision between a couple people. Like that's what's kind of
happening. Or some tacos.
Yeah, it's like all of a sudden you're like, this is how the industry is going to shape up. And so, you know, that's where I think things will really be flushed out. You know, where is the lion's share of the market going to be? Where is the value? How will the structure of the esports ecosystem exist? And that's what's in play. That's what's in flux right now. There's so much opportunity. And within that, there's going to be a lot of losers and winners, right? Like not every esports team can survive the next 25 years. So like, what is it going to take to, let's say even 50 years, like be a brand that will be celebrated and cheered for by, you know, my kids, right? Like, yeah. How does that happen? And what does that look like at that time? And that's what's, I think, really compelling to think about is putting it in that kind of time frame. And how do you, as an organization, provide value over time to ensure, you know, either Team Liquid sustainability or team sustainability or streamer sustainability, whatever orientation you're looking at the landscape.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, to think you've got organizations that want to push and innovate and be at the forefront of trying new things, and then, you know, it's a race at that point. There's only going to be so many winners, and then there's the aspect of survival. Like, can you last long enough and not run out of money or be swallowed up trying to compete with some of these organizations? It's fascinating to watch. And one thing you mentioned is just the kind of esports is broader than just competing at the very top. And there's this blurring of lanes into the content creation ecosystem and watching people play video games. How has that evolved for you as an organization in TL over the years?
Yeah, I would say the types of content that existed 10 years ago to today and where content will exist in 10 years from now when we're thinking about live streaming is going to continue to become more creative, and there's going to be more resources required to create the content. It's going to have to continue to be disruptive and compelling as it becomes more competitive, right? Like if you go back 3-4 years ago, you know, that let's just say the number of content creators, the number of channels was a fraction of what it is today, right? So in order to be consumed and create yourself as an IP, or like what you do as an IP, something that will stand the test of time. Like if you think about successful IPs, you know, you think of like Marvel or, you know, some of the things that Disney has done, you know, those are brands, those are IPs. Like now, today, individuals have this opportunity to create their own IP and broadcast that if they're creative and they're consistent with their content and they're training themselves on how to be entertainers and very specific in what genre they play in or create content and their distribution strategy and, you know, the scheduling of that content. And
it's interesting what you're saying right now, is because are you talking about any content creator, or are you talking about the content creators that have millions of followers? like your Mr. Beasts, your Pokemans?
No, I'm really talking about like all content creators, but the ones that have been able to master those elements that I described are the ones that are likely going to become very successful, right? Like they think about every aspect of their content with such specificity, with such a detail orientation, right? Like I think I remember hearing Mr. Beast at one point say like he obsesses about every video and no video is ever good enough. And he finds something wrong with every piece of content and how it can be better. And he approaches that so that the next video becomes even better, whether it's like what's in the video or how it's done or who's in it and or how it's broadcasted or the SEO or the titling or the thumbnail or the, you know, all of that. It's like a tapestry of marketing optimization to create a piece of content. And I think that kind of obsession is what you see in very successful content creators. They just wake up every single day and they think about, what could I create? What narrative is happening in the ecosystem that I could piggyback on? What kind of interaction could I do with another content creator? Like they're thinking about their own TV station. That's the way I think about it, but it shows my age again, is like, you know, what is being broadcasted every minute, every hour, every day of the week? How do I create IPs so that they become branded and then people hear about them and then come and want to watch that content, even though they may not know me, but they hear about the piece of content that I'm creating. So I think all of that is like such a complex recipe for what the new age of content is going to look like. And that's what we're seeing as Team Liquid, is not only the content we create, but like when we look for brand ambassadors for Team Liquid, you know, those are the qualities we look for. You know, those folks that have,
you have
that
this
hunger.
Phrase.
Yeah.
You have this phrase that I think I need to call out because I've noticed you say it a couple times over the years and you can develop the rep for it, which is, and sorry if I bitch, get shit done, think big and have values. And I think especially those first two things is standing out to me as I listen to what you're saying the last few minutes, is no matter where you're at right now, think big and get shit done.
Yep. Yeah, it's kind of like my own little personal motto, you know, because, you know, I think hard work is really important and you just got to get shit done. You know, at the end of the day, like results matter and you got to move the needle, you know, and
you're talking about content creators building the next Disney. That's that's not small thinking.
Yeah, you got to think big too. Exactly. I mean, didn't Mr. Beast like come out with his own like game show the other day or a couple? I don't know. Like it's just, and then you think about it like, whoa, like if you're that big of an IP, like you can maybe, if you have your own platform, you can like, it's kind of crazy, you know, and you're affecting millions of folks that, you know, where Mr. Beast in this example is like a brand, right? So that's super powerful. That
distribution, owning that channel, the distribution channel is incredibly powerful.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's really hard, obviously, to like compete with YouTube. YouTube is massive. Twitch is also so big. But every, I don't know, 5 to 7 years, it feels like there's also new platforms that come and replace the platforms that become too marketing heavy, you know, like, oh, all of a sudden like TikTok comes out of nowhere, right? Or Instagram comes out, or, you know, nobody goes to Facebook anymore. Like, okay, well, what is the next platforms that are going to be here in the next 5 to 15 years?
When you think about these platforms, how do you decide, like, we gotta make a TikTok? Like, why have we not done it yet? And like, you've waited a year already. And like, how do you, as a, because TL is, I mean, it's a lot of things. It's an enterprise, as you mentioned, but you pump out a ton of content, which is relatable to a lot of creators. How do you decide like where you should be putting content?
Yeah, that is a very complex question. It really is based on where the audience is. So first you look at that, and let's just use an example. Let's say we're talking about our Free Fire team. That is a mobile game that's kind of like PUBG. Most of our audience is in South America with a really strong Brazilian audience. And so based on knowing where the consumers are for that particular content, then dictates your digital platform strategy. What digital platforms are popular in that region? Okay, let's say YouTube is one of them. Let's use Instagram as another. Okay, well, if those are the main channels, then most of your resources need to go to create content against those channels. Now, how do you optimize content on YouTube and Instagram? Well, they each have their own level of mastery that is required to gain engagement. So that's look, feel, productions, timing, labeling, comment and reply marketing, and then you put an engine behind creating content in that vertical on those platforms and then push out content on a consistent basis. Rinse and repeat for all these different regions in the world by all these different game genres. And then it becomes this very complex equation of content, especially if you're in 17 different games.
Yeah, I was gonna say there's a lot of different channels for you to consider and geographies, but it is, to your point, you know, break it down and then think about it from an ROI perspective. And if you can try and, like, you only have so much time. As if this is an individual creator, you have so much time,
right? It's not about being comprehensive. It is more about starting where you'll make the most impact, or trying to.
You were mentioning before that you have content creators on your roster. When you're thinking about investing in a content creator and bringing them into the TL family, what are you looking for?
First thing is personality fit. Folks that are of the right kind of value system for Team Liquid. How they think, how they treat others, how they want to be treated. Communication style, those are really important. You know, like, we're a little apprehensive when working with somebody that may not be as brand safe, right? Or, and there's always a fine line of that, right? But, that is definitely first consideration. Second consideration is, how much does this individual enjoy making content? Right? Like, go back through all of their VODs and their content, and can you see that kind of consistent release, that consistent schedule, publishing schedule? Is the content improving over time? Like, if you go back and scroll 6 months ago and then look at what it looks like today, do you see like a transition? Do you see things changing? Is there like learning happening with the style of content and how it the quality of it, I guess? And those are kind of, at least for us, key indicators. Like, this person's pretty dedicated, right? Like, they're honing their craft, they're serious about it. Then those two are good. And then, of course, like, game and all the other.
Are you looking for synergy between like the other, like the, you're in a lot of games, but are you looking for synergy with those 17 games, or?
Yeah, of course. The way that we think about this is that we're first an esports team that is very athletically forward, right? Like, winning is very important to us. Our commitment to winning is pretty much unwavering. But we understand that aside from having a team or an individual compete in a certain title, we also need to have brand ambassadors or content creators that help amplify those messages or support the messages that are coming out from our teams and players as they compete, and to give a feel to being in the community for that respective game, and for TL to have an extension of our brand or our voice via V through a content creator or brand ambassador. What we're finding today is that it is kind of difficult to find the folks that really have a genuine affiliation, like a real deep feeling of TL family, or hope to at some point, right? Like, those are the individuals that we're looking for. I think just over the last 3 years has been a rise in like the number of brands and advertisers that are coming to the space and other esports teams. And so it can feel a bit,
transactional.
Yeah, transactional, tangential, rather than that team feel. And that is where we're trying to be as cautious as possible that it doesn't just become a transaction, because then it loses the whole meaning behind what the intent was.
It sounds like that's an opportunity for listeners, whether they're at the point where it makes sense to join a team or not. But if you have a passion for a team and you're a big fan of that team, you know, teams are really looking for people that have that passion and have can create that storied history with a brand, whether they're small right now, but may grow and be bigger in the future.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And, you know, sometimes those individuals, they appear in our community, you know, like I think Asa Butterfield, which is, you know, he's an actor and he's been in a few things, and, you know, he just watches our Dota events and just like came and hung out in our Discord and like knew some of our staff and is a big fan and was like, yeah, hell yeah, I'll join as a content creator or a brand ambassador for you guys. I love Team Liquid, you know? Like, that's what we're looking for. Those like kind of places where there's just this genuine affinity and, you know, just feels good to like root for an organization that you care about.
You launched Liquid Plus, I think in the last year, and it's a really cool initiative. I'm very bullish on it, and I'm excited to see you guys building that out. I think there's some parallels to getting subscribers, or like paying subscribers as a content creator, in that you're building this, you've got this loyal community that is wanting to be a part of the kind of inner circle. What are some of the lessons you've learned that may be applicable to content creators as they're trying to build a sustainable business for themselves?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is there any lessons from Liquid Plus that you think would be applicable to a content creator that's trying to build up their sub base?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say if there was one big takeaway, it would be that as Team Liquid grew in size and scale, it was harder to identify a direct relationship with Susie or Joe, right? Like the individual, the person that was there rooting, cheering, watching, participating in our Discord, liking a tweet, whatever it might be, right? It just became harder to identify them. And so within Liquid Plus, we started to see them again as individuals so that we could say, hey, we know that you have watched every Counter-Strike event for the last 6 months. Like, let's do this cool thing together, right? And reach out to them and communicate and have a relationship again, you know? Rather than this kind of like one directional view of creating a community where it's like, look at what we do, watch what we do. It's like, no, that's fucked up. Like, the way that it should operate is like, hey, we're part of a community together. Like, hey, what's up? Come hang out, like, and talk back and forth and have a reciprocation, you know? And that's like the analogous thing would be like, if you're streaming and you're streaming to 10,000 people, it's obviously impossible to like know everyone in that chat, right? It just becomes too much to manage. So like, how do you continue to manage relationships as your community grows? And that's for us what the power of Liquid Plus has been, is that even if 10,000 people are watching our streams, we can now identify who's watched more or talk to them. Like, they've signed up in our program, they're part of our community, and now we can reciprocate. And so my lesson being, or my piece of advice to all the content creators, is like, don't lose sight of seeing your community as individuals, because if you know their names, you know, like, then you always have a relationship and you don't want that to become disconnected or distant.
Yeah, that's super important. Well, Steve, I really appreciate you taking the time to share your story. I am so grateful on behalf of the gaming industry and the broader universe that you got your soul back and left finance all those years ago. What you built with TL over the last decade is incredible, and I'm sure there's more to come in the next decade. So hats off to you, and just sincere gratitude for being out there hustling and putting in the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
You built something incredible.
Well, thanks so much. I appreciate you inviting me on the show. This has been a lot of fun, just going down memory lane a bit, and you know, and good luck to all the, you know, content creators that are starting off on the platform. You know, follow your heart, work hard, think big, and have values.
I love it. I love it. Okay. Thanks, Steve. All right. Appreciate
it. Take care. Bye.